Now, we all know, my God, the greatest marketing of all time for this movie. The Barbie movie is out. We know that. And whether you reckon it's a pile of rubbish or the greatest toy ad since the Lego movie, it does seem to be a fair bit deeper than most of us might have thought. Here's a little clip. Have a listen.
This is the best day ever.
It is the best day ever. So is yesterday and so is tomorrow and every day from now until forever. Yes! Do you guys ever think about dying?
Amazing. So we asked Dr. Brian Penny, neuroscientist, to come in and explain just a bit about why humans think about life, death, and what happens next. It's happening in the Barbie movie. She seems to have a conscience and she's thinking about herself and all that kind of stuff. Now, Brian, this is fairly heavy stuff, especially since we're talking about Barbie. But do we have any idea why the human brain has come up with a concept of God and the afterlife? Do we know why?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. I think historically speaking, there has been so much suffering and death. And like, if you think of the wars and back in ancient times, lots of death, lots of suffering. So the human brain, the human sense of self, we needed like a fate to be able to get through the challenges of life. So I think the concept of an afterlife, like imagine lots of infant mortality, imagine lots of people dying. Like, you have to give yourself a reason, a motivation, a meaning for living around that as well. So I think what it kind of provided us with was a way to cope with the suffering. And I think that's where it really originated
from. And still does.
And still does. And still does, yeah.
Okay, so as a brain scientist, how would you explain as simply as you can, please, Brian, what human conscience is?
Right, so here's something really, really interesting. This is something that scared me a little bit when I read the research on this. So when we get an anaesthetic, I've never actually had a general anaesthetic. I did, I just can't remember. It was a long, long time ago. But apparently it's not like a sleep. It's actually like a nothingness. Like, so can you remember like before you lived? Before you were born?
No, obviously, no.
It's a nothingness, you know that way? Yeah. There's no, it's not like a sleep. There's not like some sense of something there. And when you're asleep and you wake up, there's a sense that you've been asleep. But apparently an anaesthetic is just like there's a nothingness there. And what the anaesthesiists do, I think that's the right word, they basically shut down a part of the brain. They don't really know exactly what they're doing. They shut down a part of the brain primarily called the thalamus. It's like the relay center of the brain. And they shut down all activity. So it's like a nothingness is there. So it's really, really interesting and a little bit scary that that's, is that what it's like afterwards? If that's what it was like beforehand, it's a little bit scary. So the answer is they don't really know what they're doing exactly, which is scary in itself when they do that. And we don't really know the neuroscience around this as well. We really don't. That's the reality of it.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Okay. There's no answers. There's no answers.
That's going back to faith. I just want to ask you then, what about the idea of mortality and our awareness of it? If people don't believe in God, how can they get their head around that? Or how do people get their head around that?
So I don't think they do. I don't think most people do. I think people are terrified of it. And I think this really taps into a sense of self as well. Like we talk about consciousness. How is it there in the brain? There's elements of that as well. I can touch on that. But one thing that I think many people know they're going to die, but they don't really believe it. And I read a book called Tuesday at Murray's. And Murray was basically this incredible university professor. He'd only a few days to live. And a former student of his found out, freaked out, and interviewed him for his last few days of life. And basically that was his idea, that you only start to live when you believe you're going to die. And I used to love this idea. It's like, there's a thing in Stoic philosophy as well called Memento Mori. Focus on your mortality so you can truly start to live. And if you like don't really believe that death is going to come, even though it's inevitable, and a lot of people do that because they're too terrified to even think about it, well, you're not going to make the most of life. And this is a little bit freaky as well, Jen. So I'm really interested in this topic, and I recently bought this thing. It's the Weeks of Your Life poster. So I had an estimated mortality of 88 years of age based on where I live and all of the information. So I have a poster basically that has every week of my life, of all the years I've lived and all the years I'm going to live, and every week I tick off a little black box. And some people will think that is absolutely freaky, but what that does, it gives you permission. It's sort of focusing on this is the amount of time you have left to make the most of it. So I think it's really important from that perspective as well to focus on our mortality to give us the motivation to really make the most of life.
Mm. Religion also has another part to play. I mean, even cavemen had their own sense of right and wrong. But how does religion help to enforce it by making us feel that there's always someone who sees everything?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, because I think when you think of like even religions as well, and obviously values and morals and our ethical, our moral compass sort of predates all of that. But I think if you live through a moral lens, not everyone lives through a moral lens, but I think what religion can really give us is this idea that there is an all-seeing being, that like, it's even with kids as well, like when kids have this egocentric kind of view of the world, that they think up until a certain age, I think it's 6 or 7, that if they do something, they think their mom sees it, they think everyone sees it, so they freak out and they nearly tell on themselves because of that. It's just the way the human brain develops. So I think religion kind of taps into that as well. It's because it's all seeing. If it's God or whatever that is for you, it's all seeing. So somebody is watching you all the time. So I think it really helps us to lead our lives through a moral compass and have a set of values around that as well. I think that's quite important.
And how do people deal with that if they have no religion? Like, I have a lot of atheists in my life. And how do they navigate that, the rights and the right and the wrong, and dealing with their own mortality if they don't have faith to rely on?
Yeah, it's a challenging one as well. Like, I think like religion sort of supplies us with that moral compass, but I think we all have that within us as well. So I suppose society, and it's the people, like you could say there's laws, there's like the laws that the government have as well, and that plays a big role as well, because you think of a lawless society
and family values,
yeah, and it's like it's a value system that you live by. So I think the people that you're around have a huge influence on how you're conditioned, how you're programmed, and how you behave in the world. And it is how you develop your moral compass, because we're born as blank slates. Like, that's the realization, that's the reality of it. So it's the people around you who are going to teach you a set of values in a way to be able to live. And unfortunately, it doesn't always go down the right direction.
Mm. How often do you think about death?
God, I think about it not in a scary way. Well, I think about it every day because me weeks to live
your
calendar.
Yeah,
me on the fridge. And I think I wouldn't dwell on it. I see it as sort of a positive thing. Like, it's in terms,
that's unusual.
It is quite unusual. It is unusual. And it's really funny for myself, Jen. I was terrified of that. Like, before I had my own shift in perspective, I was terrified of that. And I think something that we haven't really touched on today, like, we're talking about biological death, but there's the death of the self, the death of the identity, the death of our ego. And our brains sometimes see that sense of self, that death, as real death. And I think we sort of need to lose our attachment to our sense of self or identity, because if you're so attached to that, you're in trouble. So it's like,
give me an example.
So like yourself, Jen, imagine everything in your life, you are totally consumed. I am a presenter on 2FM. Nothing else is important. Like, that was everything to you and nothing else mattered. You had no family. You didn't have kids, and that's all that mattered to you. Well, imagine something happened and all of a sudden you're going to lose your job. You're losing your sense of self. Your ego sees that like a debt. The brain perceives that as debt. And similarly, imagine like you were in here, but you didn't really care about your job. All you cared about was parenting your kids, your mother. Everything you'd done was done through the lens of your kids. That's your sense of self. I am a mother. Well, imagine when your kids get older, all of a sudden you get people like this, that they have this, they're trying to keep their kids close to the nest because they don't want to relinquish their sense of self, their sense of identity. So it's scary. Like, we need identities. We need to have these things to operate within the world, and we need labels for these things as well. But we've got to be aware of our attachment to these, because they're really, really challenging. And bringing it back to myself, like, I struggled so badly with anxiety, and my whole attachment was around anxiety. I am anxiety. I've the worst anxiety. It was royal anxiety, worse than anyone else. And that nearly gave me an excuse to do what I had to do in the world to survive. And when I had my shift in perspective, like I often talk about, it was like a breaking down of the self, the sense of identity that I had around the challenges I had in my own life. And I remember I was only a couple of weeks into my recovery and I said to my dad, says, I have no fear of death whatsoever. And it was something that was really bizarre to me because it was something that terrified me all of my life. And it was just this, I think it was, and it was the death of the ego, the death of that sense of self, just release something in me. I don't really have the answers around it, but I think it's intrinsically linked to that.
How and when should we talk to kids about death? Is this, I find it quite a tricky one, not being a very religious person.
Yeah.
My fallback is always, you know, heaven and you know, trying to explain to it because I just don't have the language of or the words to explain what happens in the afterlife.
I think kids are way stronger and way more resilient than us. And I think it's good to be honest with kids, and I think it's good. I think that's pets create a perfect situation for that as well. Like if you get a pet, the pet dies. Where do they go? They go to the pet heaven, and it gives them.
You said it, pet heaven. It's our go-to, isn't it?
It is.
But is it okay to say we don't know?
Well, it is okay to say we don't know, but then it's this idea of what is heaven, and it's really, really interesting. Like, so we often think of, it's back to the sense of self, right? And all of the religions have this, all of the big religions, all of the main religions, I think every religion has this idea of self and suffering. Mm. Like, if you look in Buddhism, it's called dukkha, it's called, and that means suffering. It translates as suffering. In Hinduism, it's called maya, and it's called delusion or illusion. So it means you're so caught up in your sense of self, stressed and anxious that you can't navigate the world. And in Christianity, it's called sin. Lots of people think sin is to do something wrong, but the etymology of sin is actually to miss the point of life. And what some of the teachings in Christianity often said was that heaven is the opposite of sin. It's like living in the present moment, the absence of a sense of self. So like afterlife is like in the future when all we ever really have is that present moment. And that's where the lack of suffering is. That's where heaven actually exists. And I'm getting very religious and spiritual
here. You're getting very spiritual.
Getting very
today.
Deep. This came from Barbie.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so it's a tricky one as well. But back to the question, I think let them talk about it early and give them a sense of it so they don't grow up absolutely terrified of it.
Somebody just texted in, Brian, saying, Jen, humans are the only creatures clever enough to think about our deaths. The thought is not an active one. Same as how you don't see your nose. We need religion or something to believe in to comfort us.
Yeah, and that really taps in. Looking at that from a scientific perspective, like we have language to our thinking, they call it thinking, but we have language to be able to think. And animals don't have that. Like the research shows that animals don't worry about death because they haven't got the ability to travel through the future with language to think about that. So we have the language to think about that, but it can spiral out of control. Like all of a sudden emotions get tied into the language, into the thinking, and all of a sudden you could be on a 3-hour journey compulsively thinking about the end of the world and everything that's going to happen to your family. So it's a blessing and a curse at the same time.
But I love what you said. I think we'll finish on that heaven is the here and the now and being present, and you know, it's great to be able to think about your mortality. It'll give you a perspective in life. And hopefully you guys will all have a bit of perspective today after my chat with Brian Penny about the Barbie movie. Whoa. Okay. Brian, thank you so much that extremely deep chat about Barbie. Dr. Brian Penny is a neuroscientist on Instagram. If you want to give him a follow and see where his upcoming gigs and things are and online courses, how can people follow you, Brian?
Yeah, I think Instagram's the best place to go, Jen. It's BrianPenny78. I do need to change that, as we always say, giving away my age. But I mean, new website will be launching very soon. I keep on saying it. It's brianpenny.com. The existing website's there, but I have a whole new website launching in about 2 weeks.
Deadly. Good stuff.